There Today is Thursday, August the 18th. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, Donald Trump makes some major campaign changes amid sagging polls. The Red Cross sends thousands to assist flood-ravaged Louisiana. Vice President Biden warns Kosovo of the cancer of corruption. And also ahead, a couple of new exciting movies opening this weekend. It's all on today's International Edition. We begin with the race for the White House. Frustrated by his dropping poll numbers, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump shook up the top leadership of his campaign on Wednesday, less than 3 months before the November election. International Edition's David Byrd asked VOA national correspondent Jim Malone what he knows about Trump's newly hired campaign chief, Steve Bannon.
Yes, Stephen Bannon. Don't know a lot about him, but we know that Breitbart is somewhat provocative at times and definitely in the Trump camp. They've been promoting his candidacy and they kind of like to mix it up. They're aggressive. They're not afraid to hang back. The other addition he's making or elevation is Kellyanne Conway. I've known her for quite a long time. She's a respected Republican pollster and strategist. So on one hand, it looks like, is he trying to be more provocative? On the other, is it the two faces of Donald Trump trying to be more disciplined, like many Republicans want, so he avoids the gaffes we've been seeing? I think it's too early to know. The last few days, Trump has been more disciplined in his speeches. What the future holds now with these appointments, not sure.
Now, Donald Trump is known for his, shall we say, shooting from the hip when he gives a speech. He's not afraid to say controversial things. Do you think that that's going to increase with the addition of Mr. Bannon, or do you think that that's going to be more tempered? Because it could go either way.
Well, you know, Trump was asked by a Milwaukee TV station if he's going to make some sort of pivot, be more moderate, be more rational, kind of get away from the outrageous and the sort of, in-your-face rhetoric we've seen during the primaries. He was very direct. He said, no, absolutely not. I'm not going to make any kind of pivot. You can't change what you are. I am what I am. And we've seen this apparent struggle in Trump for months now. He'll go a couple of days by trying to adhere to a more disciplined approach, read from a teleprompter. But then inevitably, within a few days, he's back to off-the-cuff Donald Trump, speaking off the top of his head and oftentimes in directions that no one can foresee, and it sometimes gets him into trouble.
Now, what about former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton? She has been spending a lot of time in what are called battleground states, states like Ohio and Pennsylvania, reaching out to people in what used to be known as the Rust Belt, where a lot of iron manufacturing was done. She has pretty much stayed on message, right? I mean, she hasn't said too much that's controversial.
Yeah, speaking of disciplined candidates, Hillary Clinton may be the model for that. And, you know, I've got a story this week out that looks at what I think is a key evaluation for voters to make. Do you want change? And are you willing to take the risk that Donald Trump represents in bringing that change? Or are you okay with stability? And do you adhere to the Clinton view that Trump doesn't have the right temperament to be president? It's almost this stark choice of change versus temperament. And for a while now, the Clinton campaign has tried to make this a key choice, and they may be succeeding according to the polls, because in those polls, not only is Clinton leading nationally and in key states, but on the question of temperament, she has a huge lead on Trump right now. About 6 in 10 believe Clinton does have the right temperament, and less than 3 in 10 believe that Trump does. So she's winning that argument. Now, the trustworthiness, the credibility argument, that goes against Hillary Clinton. But right now, it looks like that temperament, is he fit to be president argument, seems to be carrying more water.
Well, Hillary Clinton was in the key state of Ohio on Wednesday, where she responded to the Trump campaign changes.
He can hire and fire anybody he wants from his campaign. They can make him read new words from a teleprompter. But he is still the same man who insults Gold Star families demeans women, mocks people with disabilities, and thinks he knows more about ISIS than our generals.
Clinton telling supporters at a rally in Cleveland that voters should not be fooled by any Trump efforts to revamp his candidacy. Here are some of the stories we're following on VOAnews.com. A judge orders U.S. swimmers not to leave Brazil. Attacks against U.S. Muslims are growing in frequency and violence. Parents of the Chibok girls urge Nigeria to negotiate. Indonesia sinks 60 foreign fishing ships. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at VOAnews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. Well, the death toll has now risen to 13 as Louisiana's capital continues to reel from unprecedented flooding. 40,000 homes have been damaged following a weekend of record-breaking rainfall. More than 30,000 people have been rescued since Friday. The American Red Cross says more than 1,000 disaster volunteers from across the country have been mobilized to assist. Red Cross spokesman Craig Cooper.
This was a massive rain incident, and what we've learned is that in many, many areas, these were communities that have either never been flooded or they have to remember back 30-plus years to the type of flooding that they've experienced. And the rain landed in places where there was just no ability for it to drain away.
Meanwhile, in Southern California, firefighters have made their first gains at surrounding a monstrous wildfire that's burned homes and forced thousands to evacuate the neighborhoods east of Los Angeles. It's already been a busy fire season in the state, and as Mike O'Sullivan reports from Los Angeles, firefighters expect that the worst is yet to come.
Authorities say an arsonist started this fire in Lake County, north of San Francisco. But dried vegetation caused by 4 years of drought led the blaze to spread through this rural community. There are six major fires still burning in California and others throughout the West. In Los Angeles, where many homes abut wilderness areas, officials say they are ready to fight the season's fires with newly leased aircraft, including so-called super scoopers that pick up water without landing.
Rivers, lakes, they can scoop up the water and be ready to go and fight fire continuously without having to ground unless they have to refuel.
This massive helicopter carries 10,000 liters of water, but it takes skill to maneuver it through fire zones.
You know, we're in an environment that's inherently dangerous to begin with, so making sure that you can see other aircraft in the flight path and the area around you and making sure you have good communications, safety first with everything, and making sure that we're not dropping water on anything that's going to harm anybody below us.
Standing by in Los Angeles, pilots talk about the challenge of keeping themselves, firefighters, and equipment ready for the major fires that they know will come here.
It's very difficult, given the amount of pilots that you have, to continue 24-hour operations. Rotate those pilots through rest periods, rotate them back onto the fire is one of the biggest challenges. Also, another big challenge for helicopters and all the airplanes is maintenance, keeping the aircraft flying continuously.
U.S. officials say the fire season could continue until November in northern and central California, and with current drought conditions, could last even longer in the southern part of the state. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
In Syria, while the civil war continues to rage on, the State Department says 7% of all screened Syrian refugees seeking to resettle in the United States this year have been denied approval, and 13% of the cases have been put on hold. While officials say 80% of the Syrians accepted this year are women and children, the issue of welcoming them has been a controversial issue, particularly in the presidential campaign. Earlier, I talked about what seems to be an anti-immigration sentiment in our nation with Justin Guest, assistant professor of public policy at George Mason University.
You know, it's so surprising because there are different types of immigrants that are classified according to their impetus for leaving their country of origin. You have labor migrants who are pursuing professional and career and work opportunities. You have educational migrants who are pursuing educational opportunities, student migrants. You have family migrants who are seeking to reunite with people. These are all voluntary forms of immigration. Refugees are involuntary migrants. These are the world's most vulnerable people. These are people who are being driven from their homes by a fear for their lives, whether it's due to persecution, conflict, discrimination, political violence. These are people who deserve a lot more sympathy and really are the least threatening people you can imagine because they are the victims here. But it is in the interest of a lot of anti-immigrant forces and campaigns in European societies and elsewhere to villainize them, to scare people into letting them into their country and giving them refuge.
It's happening here in the U.S. as well. We've definitely got an element of the country that definitely feels very uncomfortable with even the thought of allowing Syrian refugees into this country.
It's definitely true. Allowing refugees into the United States, though, is something that we have done for generations. And it is very much a legacy of our mistakes, but also some of our triumphs during World War II and the people that we saved and didn't save. However, in the United States, the fear about refugees is not so much a fear of immigration itself, which is what it's being construed as in Europe. The fear of refugees in the United States is driven by the securitization of the refugee. Refugees have been deemed a threat to the United States because people have been told to believe that we can't control who is coming in, when the truth is that there is an enormous vetting process for all refugees who come into the United States. And the truth is that very few people who are being admitted from Syria are actually of combat age and male. Most of them are not of combat age and not male. Many of them are children. And so, you know, there's a lot of misinformation, and much of it is politically driven.
And it would seem it's often misconstrued, the difference between refugees and migrants.
That's absolutely right. So in Europe in particular, the so-called crisis is referred to as a migrant crisis rather than as a refugee crisis. And there are really strong political reasons for doing this. When you say that a migrant is a refugee, is classified as a refugee, you are actually giving them a certain protected status according to international law that comes with it obligations on the arrival country, on the destination country, to actually respect and fulfill those obligations. So by referring to refugees as migrants, they don't benefit from those protections that they're actually entitled to if they are bona fide refugees. And so by misconstruing it, it allows opponents of refugee migration to dismiss their arrival as something that should be averted, as something that should be ignored, as something that should be deterred. And this is a political move by forces that are anti-immigrant more broadly, whether they're voluntary migrants or involuntary migrants.
Thanks so much. We appreciate your perspective. Justin Guest, Assistant Professor of Public Policy at George Mason University. Meanwhile, the UN General Assembly is holding a conference next month to address the Syrian refugee and migration crisis. Vice President Joe Biden visited Kosovo on Wednesday, his first visit to the Balkans since 2009. He warned the government there of dangers of corruption while affirming the U.S. commitment to its journey toward a peaceful democracy. And after meeting with the Kosovar president, Biden traveled south and dedicated a road to his son, Beau, who died of brain cancer last year. Beau had worked as a legal advisor in Kosovo in the late 1990s.
And he came not as a soldier. He came as a member of the United States Department of Justice help at the request of some to advance justice and the rule of law here in Kosovo and back in 2001. And he loved it here.
Well, Tuesday, Biden traveled to Serbia, where he offered his condolences to the families of those killed in the Balkan Wars, including those killed in the NATO airstrikes in Serbia in 1999. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program, Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Civil rights issues have really come to the forefront in America with unresolved tensions between African Americans and law enforcement lately. So it seems fitting that we talk to filmmaker and author of the new book, Bev, Maddie Rich. Maddie, thank you for being with us. Tell us the premise of the book.
It's based on a real-life story of a little-known figure in the civil rights movement, a white social worker, Bev Luther, who she left the comforts of her home in New York City to travel to the segregated South. And so, you know, the novel is gripping. It fictionalizes the account of her compassion and the dangers she faced in the fight to help African Americans achieve equality.
It seems very relevant to a lot that is happening in the United States right now. It seems there's a lot of civil rights issues are front and center.
Yes. The timing is perfect for people to read this and get an insight of what happened then and what's occurring now. And it's like history is repeating itself, which I think that the book will make a fascinating read for people to see the movement through the eyes of a non-African American. That was one of the things that hooked me because so many people believe that, and they still believe that the civil rights movement was an African American thing, issue, and Bev Luther didn't believe in that. She felt that this was a human rights thing. This was an American thing. And so we're dealing with a lot of the same issues that we thought we have overcome, and we have overcome a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But there are issues that should not just be an African American issue. They should be American issues that we should all solve because these are Americans who are being brutalized. But these issues, I believe, should be American issues. For us to truly have equality, the issues that affect everyone we should all be concerned about that.
Did you watch Michelle Obama's speech on Monday night? And if you did, you must have been very moved by what she said about, you know, waking up in a home that slaves built and watching her daughters play on the lawn. Two beautiful black young women.
First Lady Michelle Obama, her speech was gripping. It was heartfelt. It literally brought every emotion out of me and so many millions of other people. It made me reflect on the book, you know, in Bev, and how this courageous woman stood for the same thing that Michelle Obama was saying, that slaves built the White House, and to see the fact that, you know, there's an African-American president, two-term African-American president, his wife and children that are playing and living in that house, that is truly the American dream. You know, we've come a long way, but there's so much more that we as Americans need to do. We got to make sure that civil rights is given and civil rights for everyone, and civil rights has no color. It shouldn't have any color.
Now, because you have a background in film, you've been a director, do you plan on making this into a film at
yes.
some point?
My goal was in the beginning when I met with Simon & Schuster, I told them that my goal is, of course, to launch the book, but then also to launch a film. Right now, I'm focusing on the book, but shortly after, you know, soon, very soon, my focus will shift to making it a motion picture or a television miniseries. But it will definitely be made into something visual for the big screen or the small screen.
All right. Well, we appreciate hearing from you, filmmaker and author of the new book, Bev, Maddie Rich. Now let's take a look at what's been trending on social media with G. Abby Lee. Hi, G. What are people talking about?
Hi, Hi, Lori. One of the most popular fast food chains, McDonald's, is trending online because a fast food restaurant says it will include fitness tracker with Happy Meal purchase and limited offer. The tracker is called Step It and comes in 6 different colors. I know you're shaking your head.
Well, I'm wondering, you eat your french fries and then you check your health?
You have to burn off the chicken nuggets.
Maybe it's like the way to have fast food guilt-free. I don't know.
Yeah, actually, that's quite on point because it is part of a widespread promotional campaign called Get Kids Active. In the tracker, there's an LED light that blinks every time you walk or run, so you can check how much you have walked throughout the day or ran. But, of course, it's not as complicated as one of the more expensive brands that you have to buy.
Well, I would imagine it's difficult for a chain like McDonald's to keep up with the healthy trend that's been happening across
the
country. So I guess they have to try whatever they can.
And let's check out the social media reaction. An online publication focusing on consumer electronics and gadget wrote a story on it, and so far the new promotion is getting positive feedback. A user named Eric wrote, "As much as I dislike McDonald's, you gotta give it to them for being the only ones in the fast food industry to actually try new things and evolving."
All right. Well, so what else is trending?
The latest video from the Clinton campaign featuring Russian-American ballet dancer Mikhail Baryshnikov is trending. In the clip, he said, "I'm hearing rhetoric that reminds me of the Soviet Union of my youth, where it was a crime and continues to be a crime to be different." He defected in the 1970s, first to Canada and then eventually to the United States. If you've seen the movie Turning Point, you'd have seen him in the movie as well.
Interesting, for sure. Anything else?
Lori, this is something very near and dear to my heart. It's hashtag Black Cat Appreciation Day, and August 17th marks a day to raise awareness about benefits of adopting cats. It turns out that black cats spend a lot longer time in adoption shelters because of superstition that they are unlucky. People observe the unofficial holiday to share photos of their black cats.
All right. Love it. Black cats have a bad rap. Thanks so much, G. Follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Well, as summer in the United States starts to wind down, hot new movies continue to hit the big screen, and there are a couple more opening up this weekend. Vegas film critic Jeffrey K. Howard joins us now for a preview. Jeff, let's start with War Dogs, a film based on a true story.
War Dogs is from director Todd Phillips, who did the Hangover trilogy. And this is his first foray into, you know, instead of these crazy madcap comedies, it's based on true events about two friends in their early 20s living in Miami Beach during the Iraq War who really exploit the U.S. government in terms of their procuring process. And they're putting in bids to the U.S. military for contracts, and they're arms dealers. But they get in over their heads really quick when they land, get this, a $300 million deal to arm the Afghan military. Now, this all really happened. Now, when you get to when they're doing like little deals, you know, they're kind of off the radar. But when you're doing $300 million, they came in $50 million below any other contractor, and people start getting involved that are pretty shady. So it stars Jonah Hill, and it also stars one of my favorite actors out there is Miles Teller. And these guys are funny. They're engaging, but they're doing things like delivering guns to the U.S. military in Iraq over, like, the Triangle of Death. So not only is Bradley Cooper, Todd Phillips, the director, his good luck charm, he has a cameo in the movie as also an arms dealer, but the movie's absurd just to see how crazy the government can go and how these 20-somethings can con the U.S. government, you know? And I thought it was really engaging. It's got excitement. It's got it's crazy. You can't even make this stuff up. So I think this is one of the best films of the summer. And Jonah Hill, again, turns himself into a completely different character than he's done in the past. So I actually really enjoyed this film, and I think a lot of people will too.
Excellent. And then for the kids, of course, we've got Kubo and the Two Strings. Tell us about it.
Kubo, oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is one of my favorite films of the year. And this is from the same studio that brought you Coraline, Box Trolls, and the other big popular one was Paranorman that came out a few years ago. This is all based on Japanese mythology. And it's about a little boy and his magical instrument that battles gods and monsters, including the vengeful Moon King. And he goes on this adventure trying to find these special armor in order to battle these gods. And it's the animation is so rich because it's done in stop motion animation. Remember Nightmare Before Christmas? So it's been, you know, years in the making. It takes a long time to take a picture and move the models. It's done old school animation, but it's beautiful and it's all respectful of the culture. And it's got some of the greatest voice talent out there: Charlize Theron, Ralph Fiennes, Rooney Mara, George Takei, and of course the great Matthew McConaughey. So this is going to be not only causing, you know, appeal for children, but also adults alike. It's just absolutely an amazing pleasure on the eyes to see this movie. It's just a piece of, it's a piece of art. It really is.
Wow, that's quite an endorsement.
Yes, I was really surprised. I knew I was going to enjoy it, but after watching it, I was like totally mesmerized. It's one of the few movies I can't wait to go back in the theater to see it again. Absolutely, and it's done in the new Dolby Cinema, which is this new presentation of sound and projection. It's just like kind of like IMAX, but it's their own type of projection. So check your local listings and try to see it in Dolby Cinema. It's an experience you will not forget.
That was Jeffrey K. Howard. You can find his full video reviews online at VegasFilmCritic.com. You've been listening to International Edition. We are glad you could join us. You can find us anytime at VOAnews.com. Thanks so much to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zubair El-Tayeb. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
A living nightmare is how Deputy Secretary of State Antony Blinken described life for religious and ethnic minorities in Iraq and Syria under the barbarous, genocidal regime of Daesh. Speaking at a Washington conference on the threat posed to these communities, Mr. Blinken said there is grave concern over their very survival. He noted, however, that the global coalition's momentum against Daesh is growing and has led to a significant liberation of territory held by the terrorist group, a cut in their financing, a diminution of the flow of their foreign fighter recruits, and the elimination of thousands of their leaders. But more needs to be done. Iraqi forces, he said, are preparing for the greatest battle against Daesh to date, the liberation of the Iraqi city of Mosul and the surrounding Nineveh plains. Deputy Secretary Blinken stressed that the twin responsibilities of military victory and inclusive political and economic progress must proceed together in lockstep. Mr. Blinken noted that Mosul holds a unique place in Iraqi history and identity. For thousands of years, Christians, Yazidis, Turkmen, Sunni, Shabak, Kurds, Shia, all have made this ancient city their home. He called the area the cradle of civilization, rich in ancient cultural artifacts, but most importantly, representative of Iraq's cultural infrastructure of pluralism and diversity. He emphasized the importance of the Iraqi government's providing a fundamental accommodation in which all of Iraq's communities believe they have a future in Iraq.
All Iraqis, be they Sunni, Shia, Kurd, Christian, or any other, have to be convinced that the state that they've been asked to fight for, the state they've been asked to remain a part of, will stand up for their rights and their equities, that they can advance their interests more effectively as citizens of a united Iraq than as supplicants of other regional powers or members of isolated competitive blocs in a fractured and weakened state.
Deputy Secretary Blinken observed that the real wealth of a nation is defined not by its size or military prowess, but by its human resources. Countries that invest in the health, in the prosperity, in the security, in the diversities of their societies will thrive in the 21st century. That is the future. And with international assistance, it is the future, Deputy Secretary Blinken said, that the Iraqis can make possible for their communities and for their country.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. We'll be right back.
for.